From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, the U.S. Senate passed a massive immigration reform bill last year. But with that legislation and all congressional action on immigration stalled in the U.S. House of Representatives, President Barack Obama says he'll use his executive authority to try and address immigration before the end of the summer. We'll check in with Telemundo Utah immigration expert and local Spanish language radio host Mark Alvarez to hear more. Plus, a summary of your day's top local headlines and some voices from this year's Salt Lake Comic Con, which kicked off earlier today. All that and more just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. A little bit later on the show, we'll check in with Telemundo Utah immigration expert Mark Alvarez to hear about the possibility of executive action on immigration before the end of the summer and what that could mean for undocumented immigrants in Utah. First up, though, we have these headlines. Former Utah Attorney General Mark Schertliff has asked a judge to separate his bribery case from that of his successor, former Attorney General John Swallow. Court records filed Thursday by Schertliff's attorney say the two men should not be considered co-defendants because they face separate charges stemming from separate allegations. Swallow faces 13 charges, including felony bribery charges, while Schertliff faces 10 counts that include bribery. Prosecutors say the cases are linked and that both men accepted gifts and money from several businessmen. Schertliff and Swallow have not entered pleas, but have repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. They were arrested on the same day in July and made their first court appearances together 2 weeks later. Swallow's attorney, Stephen McCoy, has said that he, too, planned to request that the cases be split. A group of fired Walmart workers in Utah is fighting a store policy that they say leaves them powerless to defend themselves, even if their lives are at risk. An attorney for six former employees argued before the Utah Supreme Court on Wednesday that workers shouldn't have to choose between their safety and their jobs. The case stems from three instances, one in which workers grabbed a gun away from a shoplifter in Layton. Walmart says the workers violated the chain's policy of walking away when people become belligerent. A Walmart attorney told the justices that the policy is designed to keep customers safe by preventing confrontations that could get out of hand. No immediate deadline was set for a ruling from the high court. Former Utah Governor John Huntsman says he's ruling out another run for the White House in 2016. Huntsman told reporters in Salt Lake City on Wednesday that he was replying with a strong no when asked if he would enter the upcoming presidential race. Huntsman briefly ran for the Republican presidential nomination in 2012. Earlier this year, Huntsman said he was open to another bid, but he later told the Deseret News that he had no plans for a campaign. That newspaper reports that Huntsman on Wednesday declined to endorse any potential 2016 GOP contenders. Huntsman, who was speaking at a school donation event, also told reporters that he believes same-sex marriage will eventually be recognized across the country. Huntsman publicly announced his support for same-sex marriage last year. And one quick note, we had originally scheduled a report on e-cigarettes for this evening. We'll bring you that report tomorrow instead. That does it for our summary of the day's top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Now on the show, we're joined on the phone by Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert with Telemundo Utah and Spanish language radio host here in Salt Lake City, for a check-in on the prospects for immigration reform or action on immigration here in the United States. Mark, things have been stalled when it comes to immigration reform since the Senate last year passed a massive immigration reform bill. That bill couldn't get a hearing in the House. Things remain stalled. It's an election year, and so we can just kind of imagine that the Congress won't do anything anyway. And in the meantime, President Obama has been suggesting that he would take executive action on immigration reform. And I guess the question I have for you is, what is he allowed to do on immigration without congressional approval, and what might that be?
Well, interestingly, yesterday, 136 law professors and scholars from around the country wrote a letter to the White House suggesting that the principle of prosecutorial discretion allows Obama quite a lot of rein with respect to executive orders. I'll give kind of four examples. In June of 2011, the Obama administration announced principles for prosecutorial discretion, essentially going easy on some deportation cases, most specifically for mothers with young children, for the elderly, people with medical problems, students who might qualify for a DREAM Act if there were a DREAM Act. Those, so principles of prosecutorial discretion, Obama went forward with that through John Morton in June of 2011. June 2012, the Obama administration announced his Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals,
right.
DACA, which is as it's commonly referred to. It was implemented 2 months later on August 15th of 2012. That has allowed more than 500,000 undocumented youth to get a work permit. It's a temporary program. In the last 2 years, a person has to ask for the renewal of the DACA status for an additional 2 years when the first 2 years expires. That's an executive order program.
And Mark, just to clarify for our listeners, that the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, this is undocumented immigrants brought here as children, and they have, I don't know if they're deportation proceedings that are put on hold, or what is it that's put on hold specifically?
Well, they're not even, because with DACA, they didn't even have to go into deportation proceedings, but they have 2 years of protection from deportation or removal proceedings. And you're exactly right. It's for people who came to the U.S. less than 16 years of age. They had to have been less than 31 years of age on June 15th of 2012. They had to have lived in the United States for 5 years before that. A mostly clean criminal record. Most of them have clean criminal records. They also had to meet educational criteria. So it's a 2-year temporary program for those undocumented students. Two other things Obama did in March of 2013, they implemented provisional waivers. And in November of 2013, they instituted parole in place, which allows close relatives of U.S. citizens serving in the military to go through legalization of status. Those are four examples of executive actions that Obama has done. So there's precedent for executive action. At this point, Obama can act to expand deferred action to many more people.
Okay, so what we're talking about then is an expansion of deferred action in particular, maybe. I mean, using his executive authority to say, this is a policy that we're going to implement by which people could maintain legal status in the United States.
He could use deferred action. He could also use parole in place, some other technical terms and technical problems in the immigration system. Essentially what he's doing, this is the principle of prosecutorial discretion, he's deciding the wise use of resources to implement, to enforce the laws of the United States. It makes sense for the United States to use the resources that are dedicated to deportation, finding people, to find those who are causing the most trouble here. We can only deport 300,000 or 400,000 people a year with the current budget figures. With more than 11 million people who are undocumented, it makes sense to perhaps give them a kind of status here and concentrate the use of resources on the real criminal and criminal threats.
Okay.
And perhaps security threats as well. And so DACA, or deferred action, he's essentially protecting a certain class of people for a limited period of time. Executive actions are not permanent actions. Obama cannot implement immigration reform. But he's taking these categories aside so that the U.S. government can focus its resources, its limited resources, on the true criminal and other threats to the United States.
Well, you mentioned something that's interesting, which is that this is, to a certain extent, these are temporary fixes. The president needs Congress to act to actually overhaul the immigration system as it stands. I mean, this temporary fix, to some extent, kicks the can down the road. But I guess if Congress won't act, this is the mandate that the president has to currently work with.
In a sense, it does kick the can down the road because there's less pressure on the Congress to fix what I think all recognize as a broken system. But clearly, from Republican leadership in the House, there's not been action. The U.S. Senate passed immigration reform, its own proposal, on June 27th of 2013. The House of Representatives had an entire year to work on that project or develop one of its own. It didn't. It developed a couple of piecemeal procedures that handled border security, but the House of Representatives did not grapple with the 11.357 million people who are living here without documents. And so while the executive action might kick the can down the road in a sense, Congress is not acting anyway. And I think there are very clear signals that Congress doesn't intend to act until there's a new president. Reason being that the Senate proposal passed on June 27th of 2013, that essentially expires at the end of this 113th Congress. They would have to start again in January of 2015 to develop immigration reform proposals. Now, some of the legwork has already been done, some of the investigatory work. Still, we're starting with the new Senate. We're starting with the new House of Representatives. They're starting from scratch. The will would not be there to develop immigration reform over the last 2 years of the Obama administration.
Right. So the president could, you know, he has within his power to use some sort of executive action to try and deal with some of the crises in immigration right now. Are there people who are, you know, trying to throw roadblocks to his ability to do that? Or is there anything that anybody can do if they are opposed to his using executive action on this?
Well, some have raised the threat of lawsuits, but I haven't seen any credible legal foundation laid for those lawsuits. Those are political threats. There are a lot of political threats being thrown at the president. One political threat, unfortunately, seems to be coming from the Democratic Party. Protect some of the Democratic senators running for re-election, especially in the South, by holding off on executive action. So the barriers, really, at this point, are political. The barriers also may be based on the will of the president. They're not legal barriers. The legal barriers, I think, are addressed very nicely by those 136 immigration law professors and scholars who wrote to the president yesterday. To bring a precedent up, law professors also wrote the president in 2012, just before DACA was announced. Mm. And so the White House may have been a little nervous about the executive authority to carry out, to develop and implement a program like Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. They may have a little bit of that same anxiety now. 136 law professors yesterday wrote the president, laying out the legal foundation for his action. I think it's now on the president, who has suggested, if not directly, then certainly through advisors who were not contradicted in the major media, who said Obama will act by the end of summer. Obama has no technical deadline, but I know for me, I hold Obama to a deadline of September 21st of 2014.
The end of summer.
The end of summer. He won his reelection in part based on the presentation of the possibility of immigration reform. Clearly, that didn't happen. We can blame Congress. But when Obama talks about executive action, doing something to fix our broken system, he has a responsibility to act. Hmm. Independently of whether or not it's the politically timely thing to do, he laid out a foundation for action by the end of September. He or his high advisors talked about his action by the end of September, by the end of summer, to fix as much as he could the broken immigration system. He has a responsibility to do that. In fact, I think if he doesn't act, he's making exactly the same mistake Republicans made in not lifting a finger to pass real immigration reform. At this point, if the president doesn't act, he's broken a promise. Just like the promises he broke in 2008 to address immigration reform in the first year of his presidency. I think Obama's dealing with a day of reckoning for a lot of people in the Latino community. I think a lot of other people who pay attention to the immigration issue, he's got to act by the end of summer.
Right. Mark, your connection is a little bit fuzzy. We did catch what you're hearing, and I don't think that it's a problem. What about, you know, in terms of a sort of political mandate to act, what about the influx of unaccompanied minors on our southern border? I know that it's a strange thing to talk about politically because it is, more than that, its own humanitarian problem. And I cringe to talk about it as a political issue. But does that play into his ability to act unilaterally on this?
It does to a certain extent, although I think it should push him to act more quickly. Because I see the influx of unaccompanied minors, that's a refugee issue in my mind. It's also an issue of people who are actually coming to the border and trying to find immigration agents because they want to turn themselves in. They know about a program that was started in 2008 under President George W. Bush. It's not an Obama program. That they have rights to a hearing. If they're not unaccompanied minors who are not from contiguous countries, Mexico and Canada, have a right to a hearing, essentially, and this is in general terms, they have a right to a hearing when they arrive here without documentation. I think it's wise policy. This was implemented to combat human trafficking and to detect human trafficking where it occurred. the unintended consequence is this. Hmm. We're now dealing with more and more unaccompanied minors, especially from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, who are coming here knowing they'll be able to stay for a period of time because of the 2008 change in the law. So I think that's a refugee crisis that needs to be dealt with. Well, but it also could be dealt with by fixing our broken immigration system. In some ways, those children are being sent here because the parents and families can't come.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that part, I mean, it seems like part of what allowed the Senate's immigration reform bill to pass last year was the, strong talk about the border and enforcement, border security, et cetera. But okay, so a refugee issue when it comes to the children on the border.
But I think your point's a good one. Let me go to that just very briefly.
Sure.
Border security, that's the first part of the immigration reform proposal that was passed by the U.S. Senate. And border security was a big emphasis of politicians who were supporting immigration reform. I don't really like that. I think our border is overly militarized, but that worked politically. The president has very much pushed border security as a component of immigration reform. So I think I don't think that's the right policy direction to go in because I think it's wasteful spending. It seems to be the right political direction to go in. It helped the Senate bill S-744 get through the Senate with a vote of 68-32.
You know, Mark, I actually have to ask about that for a quick second. It seems like there is a lot of talk about immigration reform and doing something for undocumented immigrants when it's politically convenient for either party, and then it can fade away. Is that something that you perceive as well?
Yes. I mean, there's no question that Democrats and Republicans have played with the immigration issue for electoral benefit. There's no question about that. For one, the back and forth on do we need a comprehensive package or do we need a piecemeal package,
right,
that's somewhat political. Let's look at the individual questions. What are we going to do with the 11.5 million people living here without documents? What are we going to do if we have to deal with this issue about border security? What are we going to do to match the visa quotas to what our economic and societal needs are? What are we going to do to simplify the immigration system? People shouldn't have to wait 24 years when they qualify for a visa through a family-based category. What can we do to shorten the waits? Should there be country quotas or should there not be country quotas? Those are pretty specific questions that you can speak about without bringing party in.
Right. Practical
question.
The
problem is the entire issue has been politicized, and it's been politicized because it really is a battle for mostly Latino votes, although the Asian vote comes in and some other sectors of the electorate come in as well.
Sure.
But the immigration issue has been very much divided into these discrete issues, not to create wise policy, but to create political advantage for certain politicians and certain parties.
Mark, we are low on time, and I want to get just one more question in here, which is, can we talk about the numbers here in Utah and how many people this, you know, inaction on immigration reform affects in our own state? Do you know, how many people are living here in the shadows as undocumented immigrants?
And, well, and these are figures. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. The second part of the question is actually, do you expect that, given the promise that the president made, that he will act?
In Utah, and these are Pew Hispanic Center figures from several years ago. I think these are figures from 2010 or 2011. Mm-hmm. Between 100,000 and 120,000 undocumented immigrants live in the state of Utah. So that's roughly 3-4% of the Utah population, which interestingly is the percentage of undocumented people living in the United States, between 3-4% of the population. Does it affect certain industries? I think it does. I think we all know construction, hospitality, the tourism clearly depends in part on the undocumented workforce. Mm-hmm. Obviously, agriculture does. It affects certain sectors of the Utah economy quite significantly. Also affects certain areas of Utah. And some people speculate as to where the undocumented live, but there are certain areas. There's a turkey processing plant a little south of Salt Lake where a lot of undocumented people live. I don't think there's any secret about that. The Swift meatpacking plant up in northern Utah, I think it's Hiram, Utah, was raided back in 2006. Mm. There's a significant population there. Mm. it affects people in Utah. I actually think Obama will act. I'm still optimistic that he will keep his promise, but I am having more and more doubts as September 21st approaches.
We've been speaking with Mark Alvarez, an immigration expert for Telemundo Utah and Spanish language radio host here in Salt Lake City, about the prospect for executive action on immigration reform in the coming weeks. Mark, thank you very much for all of these insights, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see whether or not something is announced in the coming days.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. And welcome back to The Rundown. Finally today, Thursday marks the opening of the second annual Salt Lake Comic Con, not to be confused with the San Diego Comic Con. And before the doors even opened this afternoon, the sidewalk outside the Salt Palace Convention Center was packed with a snaking line of pop culture fanatics. As is tradition at Comic Con, many attendees participated in cosplay, dressing up as memorable fictional characters from fantasy and sci-fi lore. In honor of Joan Rivers' legendary fashion analysis, KCPW's Ryan Cunningham decided to give cosplayers the red carpet treatment by asking them, "Who are you?" Here's what they had to say.
Who are you?
Finn the Human.
Finn the Human from?
Adventure Time.
Okay, describe how Finn looks.
Excuse me.
Describe how you look.
Light blue shirt, dark blue shorts, black shoes, gold sword, and a kind of white beanie hat.
You have a really nice, defined beard. I don't think Finn the Human has a beard, though, right?
No, I'm going as an adult Finn the Human.
I am Harvey Dent, also known as Two-Face.
What does Harvey Dent look like?
Harvey Dent looks like what he looks like on one half of his face. The other half, well, we don't talk about the other half.
I have to say you look pretty gruesome on the other half of your face. What happened?
Well, that's what happens when a mob boss throws acid in your face.
Excuse me. Who are you?
A Mistborn. I'm a Mistborn from Brandon Sanderson's book series. It's a fantasy book series. The cloak itself is just a cloak that's supposed to blend in with swirling mists, things like that.
And why did you decide to be this character?
Because I'm highly uncreative.
I think it's creative. I've never even heard of this character, so...
10 points. You are the only one that I've seen who's actually done it like this. So, creativity and construction.
Who are you? You look crazy.
I'm Hades from Hercules. I have a Megara running around somewhere.
Hades is in, like, the Greek
movie,
god.
Hades.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
God of the underworld. So I've used aqua body paint, just some basic white and black to make some gray skin. I have some really cheap blue stuff in my hair that isn't showing up blue at all. And then just a gray and a black, a gray rope with a black sash, kind of just go from the movie designs.
Neither of you guys sound particularly happy with your costumes.
No, it's not totally that, thrilled with the costumes.
We're good. The costume is just...
It's been a long couple of weeks,
yeah.
And we're ready to be here, but at the same time, we're also ready to be done.
Who are you?
I'm just me.
You're just you?
Yeah.
I have to describe how you look, then. You have really cool pink hair.
Yeah.
And you...
I'm wearing a Napoleon Dynamite shirt.
Yeah. I thought you were, like, a character out of, like, an American New Age anime or something, but...
Yeah, probably. You know.
I'm sorry I mistook
No, it's cool. Yeah. Okay. People think I'm an anime character often, actually.
It's a pretty cool look.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm Robin.
Robin. That's a very common one that I actually know. It's a really cool costume, though. Describe it for me.
Well, I just tried to do Young Justice Robin and darkened it up a little bit, kind of like if he didn't do Nightwing's costume. When I look at cosplays, I just try and find stuff that's similar to myself, like, so I'm not trying to go too crazy, because I think that helps with kind of the believability of the characters and stuff like that, so short white guy, Robin.
And I am Lady Thor of the Avengers.
Okay, yeah.
if you will.
I didn't know there was a Lady Thor.
Well, I'm doing more of a femme version because I'm a girl.
Is this a real hammer? Is this something you would use to hammer nails?
No. It would break.
Who are you?
I am Loki, mother of a three-legged horse.
That's the best description I've ever heard.
I am wearing a dress version of his outfit. I have humongous horns on top of my head. That's giving me a headache, but it's great.
When you made the horns, you made the horns, right?
Yeah, I did. I made them out of foam and paper clay.
When you're making them, are you thinking, wow, I might have to wear this for hours?
I was, but I didn't think they were going to be this big. Crap happens.
And again, that was an audio postcard from the opening day of this year's Salt Lake Comic Con by KCBW reporter Ryan Cunningham. And you heard it here on The Rundown. We'll be back in just a moment.